Alex Marcus has joined us today to share in some continued conversations. Throughout November, we're taking a moment in worship to hear from folks throughout the congregation about what a home where all belong means to them. And so, Alex, first off, thank you for being here. For those of you who don't know, Alex is also who coordinates and manages our ushers and greeters and does great things to make sure we're comfortable and taken care of. So thank you for all you do all the time. And thank you for being with us. And I wondered, let's start with that simple question. What does a home where all belong mean to you?
I mean, I think to me it really was like having a space where everyone feels welcome, whether you're a kid or older adult, somewhere that I could know that I could always bring family or friends, and know that they wouldn't ever feel judged or unwelcome or anything like that. And so, you know, having really that space for community has been really important.
Well, how have you experienced this home where all belong, and what has that meant to you?
Well, I have to say, one of the first things I noticed about this church, I actually came on a Christmas Eve service only because my sister and brother-in-law were visiting, and my brother-in-law had grown up going to church, and it wasn't really part of my tradition, but he really wanted to go to a Christmas Eve service, and we were trying to find a place that seemed reasonable. And I showed
up. You'd be amazed that that actually is the benchmark for many people. Like, I just want something reasonable, please.
And to be fair, the other thing, I mean, I was sort of leaning towards maybe Unitarian something, but it was like way too far away. And we were like, nope, that's not going to work. Anyhow, and I showed up here. One of the first things I noticed was, one, that there were actually kids here, and like not just necessarily because they'd been dragged by their parents, but that, and then Brad actually like made a point of saying how it was okay that like kids make noise and cry, and that's fine, and you don't have to like rush them out of the church for that reason. And I remember being like, whoa, that seems really radical, which it really shouldn't be. And because I was thinking about as a kid growing up, like I never really felt welcome in church, right? Like it felt like I was there to be, you know, seen and not heard and ushered off to Sunday school as fast as humanly possible. And so, so I think experiencing like, oh, there really is like this place where like kids and everyone is welcome and valued. And then for me, having a space where like it's okay to be questioning, like I'm still very iffy on my views and whether I like fully identify as like Christian, if you will, and that this space allows for that level of questioning and uncertainty has been really important. And then, whoops.
Like we said,
like,
fine.
Right. And then, you know, my parents had always, we never found a church growing up that seemed right, but had always kind of regretted that they hadn't found anything because they felt like it had provided such an important community, you know, support area. And I really ended up feeling that in a very concrete way. Last year, my roommate at the time, Katie Miller, and her family went through a really tremendous tragedy. She lost her sister, niece, and nephew in a car accident. And I don't know what I would have done without this church and space and support during that time. And that was when I like really like got it. Like I was like, oh yeah, this is what this is for. Okay. And so that's really what it's been to me.
Just so you know, I don't script these ahead of time, okay? And so, Alex, what I'm hearing that I really, really appreciate is that space that I hear you say when it comes to the God thing and the Christian thing, you're not quite sure.
Yeah.
But when it comes to that being embodied by a community of people who will be present to you in the midst of anything that comes, that is something that doesn't feel questioned.
Yeah.
I love that. And I'm very grateful for you being willing to share that part of your story with us and for all the ways that you're a part of making this happen here. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
The stories that are a part of our lives, they matter. And I'm very grateful for those who have taken time to share them, and I look forward to hearing yours as well. We are surrounded by beautiful handiwork this morning. As I mentioned, you're invited to come up after worship, and there's just the little strings, and I find it best if you just tie a little square knot in it so that it just stays, and you just tie those in. And it can be a thought, it can be a prayer, it can be a well wish, it can just be, I want to be a part of this. whatever it means to you, know that these quilts will make it to people's lives. You are invited. If I don't know if any of you have hesitancy, like, oh, I don't know if I'm supposed to go up there. Those don't have tieable strings yet. They're not done. But please come up, take a look, see the beautiful quilts that have been made. You see, quilters of all experience levels and skill in our congregation get together every month to work on things like this. The quilts that they have made will surround members of our congregation in difficult moments and wonderful moments. One of these quilts will most likely go to someone who's fighting a tough illness. One of them might comfort and absorb the tears of someone who has just experienced an unexpected loss or death. We have smaller ones that will wrap our brand new baby infants when they are born in the congregation. Or at a high point in a special moment of celebration, we might send one with someone. We have given prayer blankets across a cross-section of the congregation over the last few years. And I'd like to ask you to take a moment in helping me thank our quilting team for sharing their gifts in this way and just doing such a wonderful thing. I know we have a few of them here. If you would please accept our gratitude. The beautiful quilts that are adorning not only are here on the rail, but you'll often see them on the altar and on the walls. They surround us. These beautiful quilts are here. They're gorgeous. They're artful. They're also all very, very intentional. If you haven't looked at the quilt of our neighborhood to realize, wait, that building with the flames, that's Fire on the Mountain. And that colorful one's the garage. And oh, next to the garage is the one with the money. That's the bank. You can see the whole neighborhood put together in the quilts. But before they become these beautiful, colorful collages, these wonderful expressions of love start in a very humble place. And I know about this humble place because my grandmother is a quilter. And when I would receive a new quilt, even when my wife received a quilt upon getting married, I noticed they would be adorned. You know, when I was a child, it was like little cars and trucks and fun patterns or maybe a simple design filled with beautiful colors. But I could look at these quilts and go, I've seen that somewhere before. I had seen the fabric before. Sometimes I'd seen it in other quilts. But certainly, I had seen some of that fabric in the scrap collection. Right? These pieces of fabric that end up in a bin or a pile or in Sue Stevenson's case, half a room in her house. When I said, Sue, do you have a few scraps I could use as an illustration? She chuckled, not quite maniacally, but in a very knowing way. The idea that this piece here is going to be in a quilt at some point in time. We don't know which one yet. We don't know where. We don't know how. But at the right time, there's going to be a place. And this will find its home. And it will join in. So many beautiful scraps. It's fabric that's awaiting a purpose, right? I remember my grandma's pile. Some of it was bought on impulse, even without a plan yet. Others left over from other projects. And some even gathered from other people who were going to just throw it away. And you can't have that happen. So you have to keep it and collect it. My grandma had an ever-growing collection of scraps that were waiting for the right opportunity to become a quilt. And as this month we are considering the words of our offertory prayer, we offer what we have and what we do and even more who we are, I have been thinking about the wisdom of the fabric pile. You see, they both are conversations about putting what we have to good use. At its core, the invitation to offer what we have is an invitation to do our best with whatever we have. To know that what we offer will be a part of something bigger. And it reflects an intention of what God can do through each of us, creating something that will make a difference in the world. Now, for our quilters, that's the cloth that weaves together. For us as a congregation, it's what we have, it's what we do, and even more who we are that we offer. As God works through us to create something beautiful. You know, I spent a lot of time with spreadsheets here at the church. And there was a time when I would just look at those spreadsheets and think, oh my gosh, so many numbers. I'm lucky that early enough in my career, I received wisdom from a colleague who said, oh, Brad, those aren't numbers. That's someone's livelihood. That's someone's generous gift. Or on the other side of the P&L, that's the opportunity to feed someone, the opportunity to bring hope to someone in a difficult situation. You're not sitting with numbers. You're sitting with ministry. You see, your financial commitments are pieces that together form the quilt of our day-to-day ministry here in this place. The $392,367.60 that made our ministry happen this year, that came from you. We don't receive any outside funding, and we ask you to make a pledge so that we can plan for the coming year. You see, we don't do ministry with made-up numbers. We don't just say, what do we want to do, and let's hope it shows up. We only plan based on what you tell us, because that's responsible. And so this morning, I want to ask you to consider what God can do through you. What can you offer in the coming year that will help us create something beautiful for the world? There's new needs. There are new opportunities to engage the congregation and the community. And of course, nothing ever costs what it did last year. As we've begun to look at the numbers, I can tell you we'll need around $15,000 growth in pledges to move into the next steps of ministry as a congregation. And whether you fill out the little paper card that we strategically put in your bulletin, maybe you noticed it. Maybe you put it in the offering plate next week. And I do. Put it in the offering plate next week or the week after. I want you to spend some time. Maybe you'll go to the website. We're going to send you a link in the email to a completely secure way. You can just click, click, check, type in a number. Boom, it's done. It goes straight into that spreadsheet. Whatever method is easiest for you to use, it's my hope that you will offer this decision the thought and the intention it's worthy of, because what we do here is worthy of that kind of intention. It's why Megan and I will be looking carefully at how we can offer more. In 2019, we committed and gave $6,500. That's 10% of our income. And we hope to grow in our giving in 2020. Because we want the ministry here to grow. And as we grow our giving, our ministry grows. Now, every single person's life is different. And yet I'm able to offer the same request to every single one of us. Please prayerfully and intentionally reflect on what God can do through you here in this place. And then please let us know that intention so we can plan to do great things with it. And we will continue to do great things. But it helps when we know. Just as the quilting team looks at the fabric available and lays out a plan before they just start stitching things together, we need to know so we can be ready for the coming year. And we have some exciting visions of where our ministry can go through what you have, what you do, and who you are. As we continue to build relationship, as we continue to serve the community and support one another throughout life's ups and downs. I'll tell you, as I was thinking about all of this fabric and thinking about what it means to give and care for people, I was reminded of one of the most overlooked and under-celebrated disciples in the Bible. I want you to hear the story of Dorcas as told in the book of Acts. In Joppa, there was a disciple named Tabitha. In Greek, her name is Dorcas. Her life overflowed with good works and compassionate acts on behalf of those in need. About that time, though, she became so ill that she died. After they washed and prepared her body, they laid her in an upstairs room. Since Lydia was near Joppa, when the disciples heard Peter was there, they sent two people to Peter, and they urged, "Please come right away." And so Peter went with them. Upon his arrival, he was taken upstairs to the room. All the widows were gathered around beside him, crying as they showed the tunics and the clothing that Dorcas had made for them while she was alive. Peter sent everyone out of the room, and he knelt, and he prayed. And he turned to her body and he said, "Tabitha, get up." And she opened her eyes and she saw Peter and she sat up and she gave her his hand and she raised up. And then Peter called God's holy people, including the widows, and presented her to them alive. And the news spread throughout Joppa And so many more put their faith in the Lord. Now, as with many key people in the Bible, our main character has two names. It's a biblical thing. Tabitha and Dorcas. They are the same person. The name Dorcas is her Greek name. It's what her friends would have called her. So we will too. Dorcas is the only woman in the New Testament to be formally named a disciple. Now, we know there are a lot of women who not only followed Jesus, but participated actively in his ministry. This may sound funny, but no other woman in the scriptures was given the title disciple, except for Dorcas. The author of Acts actually used the word with her name. And since Greek nouns actually have, they get conjugated, and so you can tell the gender based on the word itself. And in this scripture, it's the only time mathetria is used, the female version of the word disciple. Oh, sure, the word mathethetes gets used over and over and over because that's the boy disciples, and they talk about them all the time. But here in this moment, they name and acknowledge this woman of faith as a disciple. And why? Why was Dorcas known as a disciple? Was it the miracles that she performed? Was it the sermons that she preached? Maybe the people she went out and converted? Other than the fact that they use the word disciple, how can we know she was so foundational and important in the life of the early church? She was so instrumental in the community of believers, that early church, that when she died, the people in charge immediately had to ask Peter to show up. Peter, the one Jesus called the rock, the one who had been charged from the very beginning of the church's work in the world. Her death was so monumental, it required someone of his stature to be called in. Because this community of believers was so struck with grief, they needed the strongest reassurance possible. So what had she done that she would be known this way? Dorcas simply lived like Jesus. And hear that in all the ways that it's meant. Dorcas lived simply. Dorcas lived like Jesus. Dorcas simply lived like Jesus. And in her simply living like Jesus, Dorcas transformed lives. And what the scriptures tell us is that Dorcas was a seamstress. That's why when Peter shows up, all the people gathered there start telling her him the stories. She fixed this for me, so I had a place, something to wear. She took care of this. Look what she did. Look what she made. Look how she cared for us. They showed him the hemming, the sewing work, the reclaimed fabric, the garments that she had made, all of it. For the poor. Dorcas worked tirelessly, day in and day out, to make and repair clothing for widows and orphans and the poor. They would come to her with their needs. Sometimes she would seek them out if they were too embarrassed to ask, and she would give them something to wear. She would offer them dignity. And as they would thank her profusely, I can only imagine, Dorcas responded, "It's nothing, really." But it was everything to them. But to her, it was just living like Jesus. It was just sharing and loving and doing her part. And so she offered what she had, what she did, and even more, who she was. She reached for the pieces of fabric that collected around her, and she got to work. May we do the same. Amen.